Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another AfterBuzz after show of House of Cards, Season 3, Chapters 35 and 36. I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis and my lovely co-hosts.
Hi, you can find me, well, my name is Pegarad, first of all, and you can find me on Twitter at Pegarad.
Get straight to the point. I am Julian Dujarric, and you can find me across all social media at Julian Dujarric.
And my name is Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian.
All right. Hello, everybody. So, jumping right into this, last week we were talking about how there hadn't been a lot of forward movement in the last like few episodes. Mm-hmm. That changed a lot in these next two. Immediately we open with Underwood 2016. He's campaigning. Well, actually, we open with Tom and Kate in bed talking about you are entitled to nothing. Tom is doing his best Frank impression, saying you are entitled to nothing, and then it cuts to Frank's speech talking to Iowa.
Yeah, and he's having a conversation with, you know, some people, and he was trying really hard to be very charming, and he's kind of trying to play the crowd a little bit, but and I think it was kind of working and kind of not working. Some people were laughing at him and kind of on board with him, and other people were really skeptical.
And I love how, when, you know, the phone call comes in and...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about the wrong thing, aren't I?
You're talking about the second episode.
My bad.
Because there are two campaigning. They both start with campaigns, so I totally get it.
Yeah,
but this one is where he's actually being remarkably charismatic.
Oh, that's right. And then this is where Claire slides him the note.
She gets like this crazy news and keeps her calm. She's like, can I have a pen, please? You know, just writes down 8 troops were killed and passes it along to Frank.
And Frank handles it beautifully. It was actually wonderful to see him in this context because we've never seen him campaign. We've only seen him behind closed doors being manipulative one-on-one and kind of going behind people. But now he has to rally. Mm. And we're realizing he's quite the...
like the showman.
He's quite the showman, isn't he?
Totally.
He was holding court for sure. Yeah.
Right. So he's remarkably charismatic, and Claire comes on, graceful as ever, shows him the paper, and he excuses himself politely, basically saying, I think we've gone over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Seth, who basically has this exposition about what is happening, and he's talking about how 8 troops being killed in the Jordan Valley is going to affect Israel and in turn Palestine and in turn the United States. And
yeah, he kind of goes on a little bit of like a rant.
It was totally an exposition.
Yeah,
he's like, our audience members are probably not going to understand what just happened, so let me take the time to explain it to you, which I'm sure everyone appreciated.
With our lovely speechwriter, Seth.
You know, I really like the way that they explained it. It was very, like, easy, like elementary. Well, if Russia gets mad, then Israel's gonna get mad. Oh my god, I'm catching on all this.
Thanks.
And then what I love—it's
much appreciated.
And then what I love is that he turned it on his head and he said, "You have to say that the exact opposite is going to happen."
No, he's like, "Say everything, just make it sound good. Like make it like flip it around, give it a twist, make it sound good."
So that was wonderful. Then we have a moment between Remy and Jackie. They share a tender moment together, and so there's a little bit of a fire being
ignited.
It's been going on all season.
It's bubbling.
Yeah.
Just do something already.
Well, he did this episode, though.
Yeah.
Well, but we will get to that later.
So it's just the slowest moving train.
He gives her talking points to discuss during her campaign, and she's not really comfortable with it, right?
Right.
She's like, I really don't feel like, you know, military presence has to be there unless it has to be, blah, blah. And he's like, if you want to be on this ticket, you've got to do as we say.
Yeah, like, he's saying, like, if you don't want to support the president, then you don't want to be his number two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you kind of have to get on board, or what are you doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. And he snaps at her a little bit, and then obviously retracts and apologizes. Emotions have run high in this episode. Mm-hmm. All right, now, speaking of emotions running high, Stamper and Gavin get together, obviously, to discuss the location of Rachel, which he has done his job. He has located her, and she's dead.
Supposedly.
Supposedly.
I mean, did that... Are we convinced? No.
I'm not convinced
that picture,
at all.
It was just some, like, gory picture with, like, a Jane Doe. Yeah, I guess they even said that they called her a Jane Doe. It could have been anybody. Her face was, like, completely gone.
Yeah, and they said that the fingerprints matched, but I'm not 100% convinced.
Not 100% convinced. I mean,
you can tell because Gavin has been so uncomfortable, as evidence with what happens either later in this episode or the next. Can't remember. Gavin has been so uncomfortable with this entire setup.
Oh,
he just wants to get out of there because he knows that this is, like, he's already in deep, you know, in hot water or whatever.
Yes.
And so at this point, Gavin's obviously a really smart guy. I think there's like a million ways he could spin this. He could have done this to fabricate the whole thing just so he can, you know, get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I did not see her death coming, and I think that she's too important of a role in Stamper's life to be gone for the series forever. And especially, like you said, as evidence with Gavin admitting everything. That's later, obviously. We're jumping, but to Lisa.
We assume you've seen it, so.
Yeah, if you're watching this, spoiler alert, this whole episode. So anyway, Stamper obviously throws a fit, gets back on the bottle, no longer is on the syringe, he has just gone straight to the bottle. And he loses his mind.
Mm-hmm.
He goes at it.
Surprised me, because I thought Stamper wouldn't have believed that immediately. I thought he would hold on. Yeah.
Right.
So it was interesting
Or maybe he kind of was ready for it to be over. I don't know. But it was crazy to see him in that bar, because Doug is just so in control all the time. You never see, he doesn't go beyond this. He's kind of just like, and then in the bar to see him get like mad and angry and be drunk, I'm just like, whoa, we've never seen this Doug before.
And it's an insight into what Frank has talked about before. And I mean, this person has obviously existed. There's a reason that he ended up seeking help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our first insight into that other side of him. Mm-hmm. And later, which we'll get to, he says, I am not Peter Russo. I'm not Peter Russo, so we'll get to that.
Yeah,
He doesn't know how Peter Russo really died, though, right? Frank's the only person that knows that.
Well, if he doesn't know, he's got a pretty good idea.
I'm trying to remember.
Because Peter Russo, remember Frank turned the car on in his garage and left the gas.
Oh, of course, he killed him.
I don't think Frank ever would have explicitly said out loud to Doug what he did, but I'm sure Doug's like, Russo's not around anymore, and that's a good for us. So I'm guessing that there was something a little dirty.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because...
He knows Frank really well. He knows what he's capable of.
We should go back
of.
And check that out.
Absolutely. If you guys know, please comment. And,
does Doug know how Russo died?
Yes.
Yeah, let us know.
It's been a while. It's been a few years,
actually.
It's
been a while.
But I have been intending to go back and watch the rest of it because it is so good. All right, so back to the politically heavy stuff. Israel wants to blame Palestine, naturally, for the explosions in the Jordan Valley. They clearly do not feel safe. They are thinking of retracting what they have obviously agreed to. And Claire has her meeting with the ambassadors, basically saying, please hold off until we have evidence. They don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get there after Harlan Trow. Is that how you pronounce his name? Trow?
Yeah, and like, it's so funny. They just get on a plane, like, we're going to Russia.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Because he won't answer the question.
Yeah,
or the
we're
phone.
On Air Force One here. And is this when we're...
Yes.
Yeah, so Harlan.
Yes, he's the Iowa rep.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Frank is trying to win him over because with the crisis going on, he doesn't have time to campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he still needs to win over Iowa. So what better way than to feed the man a lobster?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it was against like FEC regulations to, what do you call it?
Campaign
on Air Force One.
He didn't really. I mean, like when you go back, I kind of like rewound to watch because I didn't know that either until we kind of later on they were talking about what a faux pas. But I went back and they have like maybe like one word exchange and then he's asking about his lobster and stuff. So I don't really think Frank broke a rule.
Oh, he ultimately he didn't. The intent was to campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate mentions that later and the way he defends himself. Frank defends himself saying we had a second conversation about lobster. That was it.
Yeah, you can't regulate intention.
Yeah, and Kate's
you can
just
only
gonna go
regulate actions.
She's gonna jump on every little thing. I mean, she hates everything the man does.
Yeah.
I knew the second when Harlan kind of remember he's like, oh, where's the bathroom? And you see a split second he comes out and Kate sees him. I was like, oh,
she's gonna jump on that. I didn't know what she was going to jump on at the time because I wasn't aware of that regulation as well. But now we know. Anywho,
so we learn so much.
We do. Well, yes, we do. So then you have the, we have the discussion between Frank and Petrov, who mm-hmm. finally calls him and basically says, "You did this, Frank. You were the one who did this."
Yeah, because Petrov thinks that Frank was seeing his troops as expendable.
Yeah, exactly. And then Frank obviously ends up saying, oh, he's thrilled. Petrov is thrilled about this. Mm-hmm. Now I realize he's not mourning the loss of his people. This gives him options.
And they're not letting anyone near the blast site. That was like a big deal.
So sketchy.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the interaction between Petrov and Frank. I
mean, it's my favorite thing.
Here's the thing.
It's so good.
After last episode, I know you guys remember me being like, I'm so happy all this Jordan Valley stuff is over. Obviously, it's not over. But I think that my main problem was I'm so sick, and I guess it kind of comes with the territory of this show. But honestly, I was just so sick of everybody sitting in a meeting room talking about these things happening without ever actually getting to see these things happen. And I think that's why I crave these discussions between Petrov and Frank, because you actually feel like you're watching the drama mm-hmm. unfold as opposed to watching everyone talk about the drama unfold.
Yes.
And I want to talk about that more later in the episode, but like, I think that the big problem I'm having with Jordan Valley is that it's just talk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I never felt that way with season one and season two, that we were talking and not doing.
That's true.
And I really do think that's been like my main mm-hmm. My main kind of like gripe with this season is that like I'm just so sick of
exposition.
It comes with the territory of the show, obviously it does. But I think that's why, you know, every single time we do get these connections with Petrov and Frank, it's like finally we're getting to the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I mean, you also have the challenge that the writers have now that he's in the White House is what do people talk about in the White House?
Yeah.
And it's politics. So the question becomes, how do you set up political drama that is entertaining but also believable and accurate?
And they try to give us a little bit here and there with the romances. You know, they try to keep that's kind of a way for the, you know, to keep us, you know, intrigued amidst all of the legal jargon that's going on.
Yes.
And I understand that, but I really do feel like in season one and season two, it was really, really fun to watch people fight back and forth. Whereas like mm-hmm. this season, it's not so fun to watch people discuss something in a meeting or over the phone or
right.
Well, when you get to that level, when you get to two world leaders discussing something that affects many, many people, there is no filter. There cannot be a filter because, again, this is something that could potentially change history. And so,
absolutely.
You know, I was expecting that to happen. Oftentimes in political thrillers, when you get to that level, you kind of are left wanting more. And I do agree with you. I love their interactions because it is so true. It is so heightened, and it's my expectations were met and exceeded. Mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. This next episode, which we'll get to,
was a great episode.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah. And the discussion between the two of them was so tense and powerful, and I loved it. But we will get there.
So on first, the phone, they were so sorry about Petrov and Frank.
Yes.
They were kind of going at each other, like, no, it was the U.S. No, it was Russia. Well. Mm. You guys are trying to just get sympathy, and no, you're trying, like, you think our men are expendable. So they had that kind of back and forth.
Right.
And is that when Petrov hung up on him?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
That is absolutely when Petrov hung up on him, and Frank was kind of horrified by that, mm-hmm. understandably. And then you have, obviously, this conversation between Claire and Alexei.
Wait, I want to talk really quick about Doug throwing up. Because that happened in between here.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting, really fast. Doug vomits. Keeps drinking, but he tries to clean up his vomit like really half-assed with his cane, and I just thought that was really interesting, kind of like this half kind of measure, this half clean with the cane, and like kind of just really what showed, you know, kind of his fall from grace.
A drunk person, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. So I mean, he's so incapacitated in like every way.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that. Anyway, moving on.
No, absolutely.
He's
and
a
I
rag.
Mean, we have definitely seen Doug at his lowest.
Yeah.
In this episode, for what we've seen,
mm-hmm.
That Rachel,
yeah,
Rachel. That women,
no women.
Well, we'll do it to you every time.
Claire and Alexei.
So right, this is a big bomb to drop, I guess, literally and metaphorically. But
interesting choice of words.
Sorry, pun not intended. I promise. But in all seriousness, Alexei implies very heavily that Petrov did this intentionally,
mm-hmm.
and that this was an inside job, and obviously draws upon the evidence of why do you think that no one is being allowed near the site. Mm-hmm. This is obviously giving you guys options. This implication obviously causes Claire to go back and tell everyone, because if this is true, then holy shit.
Palestine can't control Hamas if Israelis' troops cross into the valley.
Yes. That was, I think that, I believe that was in the conversation between, was that at the table with
That's
everyone?
That's where I have it with Claire and Alexi at the end.
Okay. So, right, this is a big development because it ultimately leads to Frank mm-hmm. asking Claire if she thinks that she is certain. She says yes. And he says, we're deploying troops.
Exactly, right away.
Right away, as soon as possible, without the proper intelligence. 50-50 chance. That's mm-hmm. ballsy.
Yeah.
Now, they were deploying ballsy. Troops.
And it's weird to see Frank make such a big
huge.
Move so fast. Yeah.
They were trying to deploy people to go get samples of, like, the debris and the explosions and
yes.
everything
mm-hmm.
just to confirm that it really was Russia, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they could see, like, where the parts came from?
But just
yeah.
the risk
okay.
the risk of those people being caught, I mean, the implications of that alone, just, man, I can't imagine how, like, the different things, that different scenarios that are playing out in Frank's head as to what the possibilities could be. And so, you know, it's definitely a ballsy move, very bold mm-hmm. on his part.
Yeah, and it obviously also says something about his trust in Claire. Because ultimately, obviously, that is not the reason that he makes that decision, but it definitely
it's
had a hand
influenced,
in it.
Yeah.
Well, he
yeah.
asked her, are you certain?
Yeah.
You know, what more could he ask than that? Except
exactly.
For, except for complete certainty, because, you know, there isn't always certainty.
Exactly. So, now we have Remy getting arrested.
This was a crazy scene.
This
so
was
bizarre.
Very interesting, and yeah. I was wondering if they were trying to make a comment about race.
It seemed like that because they had the kind of, like, them being like, brother, like, don't call me brother, that kind of mm-hmm. whole thing.
And also, he's like, why did you pull me over? Why did you pull me over? So I was wondering, though they haven't really followed up on mm-hmm. that
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, maybe it's just something about Remy's mental state. That also seemed to be it a little bit, because he's kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
He is. I think Jackie being married is really getting
it's
to
really
him.
Getting to
and
him.
Being happily married is mm-hmm. driving him crazy.
Well, as it is when you're very much in love with someone and
yeah.
they're in love with someone else and
yeah.
married. And,
I think, yeah. you know, I always appreciate when social commentary is made in fiction. I think it's a great way to drive the conversation, but I don't know that it was that well executed in this
particular instance. If that was the intention. I'm not sure. The only reason I brought it up at all is because he put so much of an emphasis on why did you arrest me? What did I do for mm-hmm. you to arrest me?
Yeah.
And so I was just kind of going, is the implication, like, because you're black, or is that because you're... Were you speeding? I wasn't 100%.
Like,
they didn't clarify, I guess.
Right. If I was speeding, give me the ticket. Just,
yeah.
You know,
like, just give me the ticket. And then I was like, does he need... I don't know.
We don't have any closure. We're not sure. I saw it as a conversation about race. I didn't really see another alternative, like, because those questions weren't answered.
Yeah, and I saw that way, too. So.
And also, we've never... I mean... House of Cards as it is right now, with having all these women in positions of power, I mean, they fantasize a little bit about a more equal White House, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, already than we have. So I think
yeah.
it's interesting that they would have done this, because we don't really see a whole lot of, you know, we haven't really had a lot of talks like that about, you know, kind of civil right kind of issues, and
yeah.
you know, we just
yeah.
haven't,
no,
you know, they romanticize it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk a lot about I'm there, guys. I'm in the White House discussing. All joking aside, they do talk about homosexuality to
yeah.
a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
They've talked about powerful women, but when it comes when it comes to race relations, it has not really been addressed.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was so random.
It's not. It would. I think it's
especially
it's a hot button topic, so I can understand why they would ultimately bring it up in the context of the show.
Yeah. It just seemed a little bit out of nowhere. But maybe,
mm-hmm.
maybe we're reading it all wrong. Maybe it was about something completely different.
Maybe we're racist.
Maybe we're just trying to pick something out that isn't actually mm-hmm. there. But just because Remy has been in the show for 3 seasons and
yeah.
it's never been a problem. I don't think his race has ever. Maybe it has. Maybe I'm forgetting something.
For me, it was a tool to break Remy down a little bit so that he could go see Jackie.
Just to kind of show that he's, you know, things are weighing pretty heavily on him right now.
Like, he needs her. He has nobody else to turn to.
That sounds
regardless
about right.
of whether or not it was about race, it wasn't about race. What it definitely does is break him down. He goes to see Jackie and kisses her, obviously.
He's
and
so lonely.
But like, her husband's right upstairs.
Not even show
like,
heart
that is...
for him.
No.
Sorry.
You're not having it.
I'm not having it at all. Come on, dude.
It's like, also, you have a pretty good life. You have a pretty good job.
And also, like, months have gone by. Like, this isn't like, I mean, for us, it feels like it was only like a couple episodes that they were like coupling. But actually, in the terms of the show, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It has been a while, huh? But he loves her. He even said that later.
Which I thought was... We'll talk about that. I have a whole other set of problems with
this
that.
This side is not having
Remy
this side. Right now.
We're not about it right now.
Team not Remy. Team Jackie, maybe.
Yeah,
all right,
definitely
so
Team Jackie.
You have the conversation between Stamper and Frank saying, I'm no Peter Russo.
Yeah. And
he brings the files in, like,
here's the dead girl papers.
Yeah.
Here's the dead girl that I stalked forever.
Confesses to working for Dunbar, which I thought was crazy. I didn't think that was going to happen until the season finale.
Well, doesn't he know? Doesn't Frank know that he's working for Dunbar?
I don't think he...
No, then why the confession?
Yeah, no. I thought that was going to be this big reveal for Frank later on. And even if Frank did know, he definitely didn't hear it from Doug.
Mm-mm. He didn't hear it from Doug.
So,
but I thought
way,
that someone
just,
had told him already.
You know, I thought, I was like, whoa, weren't we going somewhere with that?
I think Frank... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if Frank did know, I feel like he would break the fourth wall and, like, say, I know this motherfucker. There would be something kind of referencing that.
I think you're thinking about how he knew that Jackie had talked to Dunbar, maybe?
Right.
At that time, but I don't think he ever knew.
For some reason, I'm remembering him finding out that Doug was in contact, I'm probably making that up.
Yeah, I mean, like, Frank's gotten a lot of intel, but I really think that this one was kept under wraps.
Yeah, regardless, now he knows, and,
okay, whatever.
He's, you know, still trying to kiss up to Frank and be like, I thought I would be the silver bullet for you. You know, he's really trying to do this for you. Like, it's an obsession to please Frank.
Yeah. You know what?
It was really sad to watch him just, like, put his head on Frank's knee. It actually was really, really pathetic.
Oh, horribly pathetic. And you guys are probably right, because obviously when Doug leaves, he gets on the phone with Heather and throws shit down.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Basically, he was so mad.
What was the quote?
So angry.
I will put you in your fucking grave, was the quote.
Yeah. I love that.
But again, like, here I'm wondering, like, I don't know, this entire time, Frank choosing not to have Doug on his team, I think it was because Doug needed some serious rehab time, but I also think it's because, you know, Frank looks at Doug and he sees a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, and so him getting so mad at him, at Dunbar for working with Doug, I'm still wondering where that's coming from. Is that coming from a place of caring about Doug? Or, you know, because I think it might be.
One thing that happens in this show a lot is, as brutal as Frank can be, he's just, if not, maybe not just as, but he shows signs of affection and caring, and it's what makes him redeeming in a lot of ways to people.
Yeah, agreed.
So he'll show affection towards Claire, show affection towards Doug.
And but he has talked to Doug almost not at all. This entire season, they haven't really been in contact. So, yes, he does care about Doug, and yes, he's busy being Mr. President, but, I mean, he hasn't been showing a lot of serious bleeding heart, you know.
Just because he hasn't been showing that doesn't mean that it's not there. I mean, they have a whole history, years, decades of a working history.
Yeah.
And it can also be...
I still think maybe there was... Maybe, yes, it's because he cares about Doug. Maybe also it's a play against Dunbar, you know?
Guys,
that's possible.
I don't know if I trust Frank with Dunbar, because he has Meacham. He's like, take him home and stay with him until we know what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he doesn't want to get Stamper out of his sight until, I don't know, he kills him or gets rid of him or something.
Because
his duty to get rid of Rachel is for all we know, done.
Yeah.
So, like, what else is he going to give Frank? Yeah. What, I mean, he's disposable now, I feel.
Even if Frank does care about him as a friend, it, you know.
He cares about, like.
We know who Frank Underwood is a character at this point.
Very true.
He knows too much.
And he was working for the enemy.
He was working
for... Yeah, so I think that there's something else, that him getting mad at Dunbar was, like, a kind of power play or, you know, I don't know.
Or make it seem like he really cares. Well,
her face was terrified.
Yeah.
She was absolutely terrified, as I would be, by the way. I would be afraid.
I did not want to be on the receiving end of that lecture.
No, her face is just like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
and then she
crazy.
Hangs up, and like Harlan sitting there, like, where were we?
Oh, yeah.
He's
so annoying.
As if nothing happened.
Yeah.
Harlan Trout. That's a funny name.
It's perfect for his
round body.
Yes. And I happen, by the way, it's also very possible that there's something else going on with Doug just because of the Peter Russo comment and the fact that Frank did kill him, so they might be trying to draw parallel.
We haven't said the R-word in a while.
Yes, and the fact that he brings that up is definitely significant.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's move on to the bad agent. So, obviously, we're in the Situation Room, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For this,
That was tense.
That was hard. We kind of knew it was coming.
This is actually another thing I wanted to talk about in terms of all talk and no action. Mm. We didn't even get video footage cut out. Like, that annoyed me.
Oh, like, you wanted to see, like, the...
Yeah, I mean, like, I wanted... I felt like this was over so fast. Nothing was really built up. It just kind of, boom, happened. Boom, he's dead. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just like, we could have gone and been in... You know, actually, in the middle of the action on the screen or something. I was like,
I feel like that wouldn't have been in conjecture. It would have been kind of against the style of the show.
But here's the thing: I don't care about breaking the rules if it makes it more interesting.
Okay, that's fair.
It could have played out a little longer. Yeah,
on the video screen, we could have watched. You know what I mean? I'm not saying we have to be in there actually, but we could be watching on the screen.
But we could have played it. We definitely could have.
I thought that was so weird. I was like, wait, what?
There was some build-up.
The video footage cut out. We don't even get to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
This.
And there was some build-up.
They're in the Jordan Valley. We don't get to watch.
Right. That's true. We're so anticipating this moment. This is a pivotal moment. It's a pivotal moment in the season. So yeah, it would have been nice to have that play out a little and like heighten the tension a little more.
Yeah, especially when I felt like in a couple episodes it's been like a lot of setup, and I'm ready. I'm really ready. Like, I'm craving
to see
some action.
Something like throwdown.
Yeah.
I get that. Yes.
I did like seeing Frank's reaction where they're all listening and then you hear the poof, like,
yeah, I mean, Kevin. Yeah. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, I was about to say.
We don't talk about Kevin Spacey enough.
Kevin Spacey, we love you.
So good.
Come on our show.
I'm just realizing how badly I feel about that because he is the show.
He's excellent. I think the reason we don't talk about him is just because it goes without saying that he is remarkable in his portrayal, and it's a joy watching.
Anyway.
Both of them.
Not tip of the hat to
yes,
you.
Just... Going
so
like
I think
this.
That was all of episode 9.
Almost. Basically, the end was that they have to abort Stamparas' brother come back, and the Israeli forces officially enter the Jordan Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So now moving on. Before we move on, I wanted to direct all of your attention to iTunes. Rate us. Leave us comments. Tell us whether or not Doug knew about, or Frank knew about Doug, or
Ooh,
I guess we don't.
Yeah, but, and also I want to know what everybody else thinks about Remy getting pulled over. I would really love to see.
Yeah, I'm curious.
What the public has to say.
Yeah, so go on iTunes, rate us, comment.
Subscribe,
all of that fun stuff. So, anyway, the beginning...
Wait, I want to also talk about the Tom and Kate, because we go back to Tom and Kate at the end of the last episode. Do you guys feel like it's starting to feel like Tom and Kate just lay in bed and comment on the TV?
That's, like, all they do.
Yes.
It's so funny.
They play hooky.
They're
and just...
always just, like, laying in bed and, like, telling us what's going on, which is, like, kind of funny, because it's a really interesting way to do exposition, but...
Oh, yeah. Everything's much more interesting when you're naked.
They're smoking me.
Don't you know? It's so much more fun to have exposition if everyone's naked involved.
But they remember with the hurricane, they're like, oh, that hurricane.
I know.
With this, it's like, you know.
Oh, the Jordan Valley. Yeah. Just like cigarette.
Okay, moving on.
So we open again with Frank's campaign, and this is the one that you were talking about, where you have people saying, you know, what's the point of asking us questions if you're not going to give us answers?
Yeah.
And we see, it's a stark contrast to the beginning of the last episode, where he is charismatic and totally on point when he receives this news, and now he's faltering a little bit because, obviously, the public... knows what's going on. Yeah. They might not know the specifics. They might not even understand the full implication of what's happening. But
they were asking good questions, though. Yeah, questions I wanted and the answers. I wanted to hear what Frank... I wanted the answers, too, just as much as they did. So.
Exactly. So, then you have Claire talking to the foreign ambassadors and talking about the no-fly zone.
Yeah, and she... So I guess they're talking about de-escalation on both sides, and I think Israel agreed to reduce by one-third of the troops. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Palestine was like, okay, we will too.
Yep. But Claire essentially asked them not to make any moves without all of them consulting, which they don't listen to. Spoilers.
Yeah, they're like...
Claire, of course not.
Claire can't do anything right. I'm sorry, but she can't.
She can dress to the nines. That's what she can do right.
But she's a terrible UN ambassador.
And she can fail to emote. Yes. She does that really well.
Yeah.
She's so subtle, though. Crisp. So, Stamper, I don't know why I have this note, folding clothes compulsively.
Because he...
He's folding his brother's clothes.
That's right. Thank you.
Then his brother gets a phone call from his wife and kids, and he's kind of listening to him talk like, "Ooh, could you be like, you know, cute to his kids?" And I kind of felt like that whole thing with his brother and kids was like not necessary. I don't know.
A little bit of a snooze.
Yeah, I mean, was that like an attempt to humanize Stamper because we saw him as so just.
Well, I think it's definitely going somewhere. I think this is just the beginning of...
We already saw... Yeah.
Well, if it was an attempt, it was a failed attempt, because I didn't feel... I actually felt like as if he was dehumanized after that interaction. Like, it's he's true. Just like, you have kids and that's good for you, but I'm an animal, a political animal, and I'll never have children.
Because
he's a man, but he'll never have children.
The only time... I actually did think it was rather sweet with him lying on the couch and the kids throwing the letter paper and him like throwing it back.
I thought that was sweet.
That was a nice touching moment.
That still doesn't.
Wait, do we talk about?
Oh, it doesn't like it doesn't fix everything else. Certainly, you don't get to hold a baby and then you're fine. But can we talk about what
Frank wanting to postpone the debate with Dunbar?
Yes,
and then also Tim Corbett from the Sentinel called.
Yes,
those two things happened somewhere along those lines.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Remy. Basically, Remy asked Jackie to postpone the debate, and then they. More importantly, end up talking about the kiss and saying that they still have strong feelings.
And this is when Remy said to her, "I've loved people before and I've learned to let them go," which I actually thought was super manipulative. Because what he's saying to her is, "I'll be okay." But actually what he's really saying is, I still love you.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. You have to say it.
That song, it must have been love, but it's over now.
Wait, do we have to pay for that?
It's okay. It was really bad singing. I don't think
it was. Those weren't the same notes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's in the wrong key. We're fine. Speed it up. Just speed it up quickly.
But so, I actually thought that was really, really manipulative.
Well, then Jackie responds with, "I'm glad you said something,"
mm-hmm.
Which was very interesting because obviously there are still feelings between these two. They admit to it, but also
and they've been staring at each other from across the room for the entire season.
Yeah,
just like me and bedroom eyes.
No, entirely. I'm happy to see some movement where it's going to lead, obviously.
Oh, there's some movement.
But there is movement, so Okay, so you have that whole situation. And Frank calls Tim, and he basically says Tom approached him to talk about the book.
Mm-hmm.
Which surprised me. Ish. What I mean by it surprised me ish was Tim just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But his presence.
Which he actually did last season, too.
It was like, "Oh, hello, I'm Tim."
Yeah.
But
he just kind of pops in and out.
Exactly Tim, me, like Tom. That. "Oh, ho, I'm Tim."
Yeah. Oh, Tim. Oh. Yes. I like this guy, though. I really do. He seems so genuine.
That's a breath of fresh air, then. Because genuine is not common in this series. So, we have that small moment, and then obviously it is announced that Israel has introduced a no-fly zone.
Mm-hmm.
And
wasn't that weird when Frank was lighting the cigarette and he was smelling the gas on the range?
Oh!
Yeah,
I blinked, so I missed. Half
of
this.
It happened like right after this. He probably talked on the phone, or no, I don't know what happened.
Frank was under a lot of stress.
I just know
he needed to get a whiff of something.
He reaches the bowl down, grabs a cigarette, fills up his little, you know, ashtray with water, whatever, and then he just goes to lights the cigarette on the range.
Yeah,
and
I
then
remember
just like
that.
Stays down there a little too long.
Oh, yes.
And then Claire's like, "Oh, you have a call." He's like, "Oh."
Yeah, and then is that why he starts coughing right as he approaches the podium?
Right, yeah. Probably, considering he just
inhaled
gasoline and smoke and tobacco. That was strange. It could be a symbol of his self-destructive nature. It could be a lot of things. Let us know what you think.
Or they needed to fill time.
I don't think so. This is a long episode.
I don't know that they do that. Yeah. I don't ever see that ever happening.
Happening? Like, oh, we don't have enough to talk about on this show.
Yeah, exactly.
With, like, the 30 plot lines.
Yeah.
That we are desperately trying to remember here.
So the speech, like we were saying,
la, la, la.
Jackie's watching it with her husband, and she's like, Frank's in trouble with this whole Amworks thing, with the Jordan Valley thing, and she's kind of thinking about backing out of the president.
No surprise. No surprises there, I don't think.
Also, do we know who Dunbar's running mate is?
Not yet.
I'm wondering if Jackie hypothetically leaves, is she going to want to run on her own, or is she going to try and get on the Dunbar ticket?
Well, she said that she was going to focus on Congress. Okay. But then
he was like, you're not really going to...
With cutting the pomegranate,
which
is so
strange. Let's talk about the pomegranate. Pomegranates.
Let's.
Yeah, so I want to, because that was super specific, and they really cut to it. Pomegranates are a sign of fertility and abundance.
Yeah.
And him kind of hacking away at that, like, I'm wondering if that's maybe kind of like some kind of foreshadowing, because along with this marriage came obviously a beautiful apartment. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That was the first thing I noticed. I'm like, I want to live there.
It's a beautiful apartment, and the kids. She got the kids along in this marriage, and that's been a really big deal that she's now a mother or whatever. And he's hacking away at this pomegranate. I was wondering if that's foreshadowing her and him, you know, separating and her getting back with
Remy. It's definitely something specific, because they were so careful to make sure that was brought to your attention. It's not like, oh, I'm just cutting a random fruit. They focused in on that pomegranate.
And he hacked at it, too. It wasn't just like it wasn't like this. It wasn't like careful surgeon hands. It was like axe away.
I wouldn't want him. Isn't he a heart surgeon or something?
Yeah.
Nah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to hack away my heart like that.
So that's why I was wondering if maybe that's, you know, kind of
a sign of
things to come there.
Infertility under notes.
We had the fertility under notes with the eggs, which I'm still waiting for, guys. I'm waiting to see if Claire's pregnant. And then that was like in episode 2. Mm-hmm. And then obviously now hacking away at the pomegranate. So Petrov says that he will fly in the no-fly zone regardless.
He's like, shoot me down if you want to. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was very Mother Russia.
Yeah.
And Frank decides.
I am Russians, and Russians do not abandon their own.
Russians do not abandon their own.
Yeah.
Frank decides to go to the Jordan Valley. He knows the risks, but he decides that he has to. Then you have... I mean, that kind of speaks for itself. He's made this decision that he absolutely has to go and talk to him face-to-face, which we find out later is kind of bait. But then Claire talks to Alexei, and Alexei says that he's being recalled to the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks,
Yeah, so she thinks, oh, they're, you know, they've got him. Oh no, they're gonna kill him.
So much lies.
Lies and deception.
And he's just playing her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's totally playing her.
I know.
It's so sad. Alexei, man, I'm about to get him to go and break in my heart.
Because it really felt like they were like BF.
Yeah,
you know,
they were
BFFs.
Bonding. And he seemed like a stand up guy within reason, his, you know, the context of his life. And
as stand up as a Russian could be.
Yeah, stand up as a Russian could be.
Those are a quarter of my ancestors you're talking about.
Speaking of, strictly.
It was a little disappointing to see that happen. I thought he was going to be one of the good guys.
You want at least like one person in the world besides Claire who thinks that Claire's any good at this job.
Because
nobody else thinks so.
No. Well, she's not.
Because she's not good at it, you know?
She's not good at it.
The one thing that she was right about, though, comes right after this, which is she tells Frank she does not think it's a good idea. He disregards her judgment.
Yeah.
The one time he disregards her judgment is the time he should have regarded it.
But I'm happy because it gave us the best scene in the episode.
It did. In the episode, absolutely. And before we get to that, you have this quick exchange between Tom and Claire where Tom says, oh, you know, he loves you more than anything.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And kind of gives her the anecdote about him saying he doesn't deserve her.
He says that there's one big thing missing in my book, and it's you.
Ugh. Lies.
I know.
Many more lies.
And Claire goes, me.
Yep.
I'm just going to go upstairs and hit on your husband. Excuse me.
Yeah. Which was a little out of character for Claire. I think she would be a little more astute than that. Like, come on, buddy. Like,
yeah, but you know what? Tom's been around a lot, and they haven't really had any interaction. No, so, about time, I would say.
Right. So then you have this meeting between Frank and Petrov.
It was cool seeing Frank in the, like, military.
He looked
like,
so silly. He looked ridiculous.
He looked so silly, looked, I know.
Ridiculous. So funny.
And he looked ridiculous next to Petrov, which obviously was the point. He comes in, like, with all this military gun, and Petrov's like, you could take that off. So, you have that, and basically, he gives his list of demands, culminating in, Claire has to go.
I can't believe that.
Which is so brutal. And Frank says, that's not on the table. And he goes, well, it's non-negotiable.
Oh, his face.
What a cold cut to the heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's...
Because he knows.
That's so personal. And he says later, I know how much she means to you. So if you do this, mm-hmm. I know that you mean business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which,
what do you say to that? It's a lose-lose.
I mean, and you know, Frank gives in to every single demand. Every single one.
He doesn't have the upper hand in this one.
No.
He has to.
He's got nothing.
He has no cards to play.
Which is really, really unfortunate. And the most unfortunate being that he has to ask his wife to step down from the position that she has wanted for so long. It was hard for me.
Was it? As a viewer, I was kind of like, fair.
Yes. As a viewer, I was like, fair, but I also knew that this will not lead to good things between their marriage. Mm-hmm. Because they've been on the rocks recently anyway.
This is a game of Jenga, their entire House of Cards, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
This entire episode is just going like, ooh, maybe we're going to be okay. Maybe we're going to be okay. Nope, that's a little bit wobbly. Ooh, maybe we're going to be okay.
Something's got to give. I talk about this a lot. The levy has to break at some point, and I think...
It's getting there.
Yeah. It's now.
We're gonna see a separation here.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it's great to not have her be in that position anymore. I don't think she's very good at it, but
and it's doing so much more harm.
Or
than good.
I'll say logically, I think that way. Personally, just seeing her face and how really visibly distraught she was really got to me, and I think that's maybe what you were talking about, the difficulty.
I was talking less about from a political standpoint what would be the best move, because his hands were tied, and ultimately probably is what's best for the
it's the smartest decision for sure.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's why you're kind of like, well, at least this is not the worst thing for Frank.
Yeah, but what's hard was on a personal level watching
because her sales are so deflated. I mean, just the way it's been all season, she's kind of been slowly coming off of her, you know, high imposed horse, and we just kind of see her fall from grace this entire season.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, both of them do. But the thing that's hard with her is she doesn't get the glory that Frank has gotten all of this time. So she's really feeling like she's been feeling for a while like second fiddle. Yeah. And this was finally her chance to prove herself and shine. And for a while, it looked like she was the one good thing to happen in the Underwood administration.
Yeah, for a little shining little moment.
For just a moment, and obviously that has collapsed.
But I think it just goes to show, you know, especially with her saying to Frank, you know, I'm not sure if you should go to the Russian, to the Jordan Valley. I mean, like, you know, she is a better a first lady than she is a UN ambassador.
Absolutely. She didn't have the experience. And also, Petrov brings up, frankly, a good point, but ruthless, as he calls himself, in that conversation when he's talking about how your wife blinds you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she is too sentimental, basically. And you and I, the two of us, were ruthless we are people who, you know, he talks about his stab wounds. You're like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
How very manly. Yeah. He just like lives every shit.
These. I have scarred stomachs.
I killed the bear with my bare
hands. Could you kill a man with your bare hands? I think so.
Did he kill a man or a bear?
Oh. No, he was a guy.
It was a dude with his bare hands.
Well, he always talks about how he got into the fight and got stabbed, but he never talks about the fact that he actually killed that dude afterwards. Mm-hmm. He always leaves that bit out.
He killed. He killed him, but then it's that they knew, but what they didn't know is that he took it even further with the head and being kind of like paraded around.
Oh, okay.
That's what he's like, oh yeah, I know that you killed a man with your bare hands. Like, no.
It might have been lost in translation.
Yeah, it's, oh yes, I killed, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's, oh yes, but it's, everyone knows that, but no one knows what I did afterwards.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So,
when Frank goes...
He's got a chill just remembering that scene. It's awful.
Is there a draft?
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little draft.
When Frank goes back to talk to Claire and she's sitting there, she's like, I called you twice. Like, you didn't answer.
I sent you, like, 48 text messages.
No, but then he's like, you know, I have to focus on what's in front of me. And she's like, I'm in front of you.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, like, just tell her.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was interesting that there wasn't much time between the conversation and the firing.
Yeah.
Time is of the essence, man.
Yeah, because if they want them to pull out. They mm-hmm. want the Russians mm-hmm. to pull out. And if that's going to happen, it just has to move immediately.
Yeah.
And if they hesitate, they won't trust them.
Nope.
So it's gotta go.
I guess I was talking more, you know, in terms of the show, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's heartbreaking. It's like you don't get a chance to really process the request, yeah. Let alone the action.
Let mm-hmm. things, you know, I like to let things, you know, kind
settle.
Of simmer and then, you know.
Yeah, let's prepare for her firing. Don't just, like, ask to fire her and then fire her right away.
Right.
I get it. It's just too much. It's too much to have. Too much too soon.
No, I'm okay.
All right, we collectively owe you an apology.
Thank you.
Because last week, you were talking about the sexual tension between Tom and Frank, and we're like, eh, maybe, and you were right. I submit.
And we had some comments in the YouTube section that was like, there's no homoerotic tension between Tom and
Frank. Yeah, and you're like, just watch the rest of the series. Wait, what? That was contradiction. So, yes, we owe you an apology.
Thank you.
There was a lot of tension that came to a head.
That was mm-hmm. tense.
That was hardcore. First of all, Tom was a prostitute.
And he and Frank was like, oh, I thought that was your friend. And I was like, wait, when was Tom's friend a prostitute?
Yeah.
Did they have
that conversation?
Well, yeah, no.
Did I miss it?
He was talking about how, like, the first time I, like, took off my, like, I
no,
came
No, yeah, to that all happened this, but there was, like, a split second when, because Tom said something about, at first, I mean, it was crazy to go from turning tricks to be on the top of the bestsellers list.
Oh, right.
And then Frank goes, I thought that was your friend. And he goes, no, that was a lie, it was me. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that they had ever had the conversation. That
yeah.
The what? Friend,
I assume
Tom's one friend that he ever had, who was the same guy who wrote the first half of the book and killed himself.
Yeah, isn't that what they were, I thought that was what they were referring
yeah,
to.
They're referring to the book, I thought.
Yeah.
They never had a conversation about the prostitution.
I didn't think so either.
But yeah. I think the first half of the book was about the prostitution.
Okay.
Which is why that, because later he said, and then you wrote it all down.
Oh, or whatever, yeah. Whatever I understand.
Okay.
Because you were ashamed. La la la. Unless I am totally misquoting this, but I'm pretty sure.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure what ended up happening.
We'll rewatch it. We'll come back next week.
We'll come back and we will confirm.
We're not going to come back next week.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to talk about this next week.
I'm going to, because now I'm curious, because I have to rewatch this.
Calling your bluff. Okay.
Yes, if my memory serves me, basically, Tom talks about the fact that he was a prostitute, and he ended up writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that came out of left field to me. I did not realize he was going to be...
So is this, like, widely known? Because I remember he was talking about how he had tried to do it after he had gotten a little famous and he got recognized.
Yeah.
But is it, I'm sorry, like, is him being a former prostitute widely known knowledge?
I don't know. I don't think so.
So he wrote about it, and everyone thinks that was him.
Everyone thinks it's him?
I don't know.
Well, no,
they
definitely thought that he wrote it, but they don't think it was a work of fiction, not a biography.
Fair.
So Frank was able to put two and two together, obviously.
Yeah.
But he wrote a work of fiction.
Right.
That he told Frank, oh, the first half of that my friend, who also killed themselves, wrote, when really it was him writing about his experience as a prostitute. Yeah, so
the public doesn't know. They're not privy to that.
No, if the public knew, then Kate would know, and Kate would not be sleeping with him. So they have this whole male prostitution thing, and obviously Frank makes a bit of a move.
He's like, I mean, at first I was like, are they holding hands? Because it kind of looked like Frank was like going, like doing like that. And then
that was
like,
clever, huh? Clever shooting.
Yeah, just the way.
Just the little.
And he's like, we can pretend to be friends. He's like, no, I am real. Like,
yeah, I know.
Oh my God. I was just like, because he was talking about how he just portrayed Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And,
also, this is like the middle of the night. He got him out of bed for this.
Yeah.
And also, Frank's been drinking a lot.
Which Claire noticed, right?
She made note of that, didn't she?
Of what?
Of him coming over?
Yeah, of him coming over, not just that, but getting him out of bed.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
I think she did. Yeah, that was
funny. I remember her taking notice of him earlier in that episode, the first time he came to visit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's what I'm confusing
and
about.
And he was like, oh, and then he was asked, like, oh, we have to reschedule. And then the rescheduling was just, like, in the middle of the night. So,
sorry, can I go back to something really quick, which I thought was really interesting? Frank looks into the window. Remember when his face was all distorted in the window? And he says, sometimes I think presidency is the illusion of choice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. Like,
his hands are tied. And at the moment, let's talk about free will. No, let's not actually. But in all seriousness, when you're in that kind of position of power, and when you are basically sandwiched between all of, when your decisions are based on so many different factors and people, and you know, it's a chess game, and ultimately in a game of chess you do have the decisions that you make, but everything is influenced by everything. Nothing is in a vacuum.
Right.
He really doesn't have too much of a choice. His moves are, it's like, he, at the end of the day, he's not the king, he's the pawn. He can move here, but that's basically it.
There are too many variables for him to have a choice.
Also, speaking of a chess game, he kind of had to sacrifice where he is with Claire right now to get where he needed to be with Petrov. So he kind of got one thing but lost another thing.
And constantly.
So it's kind of just like this,
Was that the quote? And counter moves.
Never mind. I'm confusing it with a completely different show. I was about to quote a different show. Never mind.
Wow. Julian.
I was going to say, sometimes you have to sacrifice your queen to win the game, but that is a completely different show. It's not. Never mind.
Well, it applies here.
It applies here, but
you have Tom and Frank. Mm-hmm. They have their moment. He totally kind of blueballs him. He's like, go home.
Well, I mean, like, That would have been crazy.
That would have been too much. Like, Claire's in the other room. Come on now. Yeah. You just fired her. Do you have to add insult to injury?
Right, and also, Tom and Kate have been together for quite a while now. They're pretty much BFGF.
They're
so BFGF.
Don't you think?
Yeah, they're definitely in that stage in their relationship. Yeah. But it's all about the bedroom.
Exactly.
So yeah, that voice is so wildly inappropriate for the show, and I love it. All right, so it ends with Claire stepping down.
Hmm. Yeah, and how they're discussing hair trends because they need to win Iowa. So the guy comes in, they have all of her photos sprawled out.
I'm excited.
They like her blonde. I know. Yeah. I'm excited.
And maybe with long hair. It was all the pictures of Robin White, right? From her red carpet.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, oh.
Like photoshopped in with the young Kevin Spacey. Yeah. I was like,
yes. Yeah. But what I thought was really interesting was she loves her hair dark.
Yeah.
And they're saying to do it blonde again. And she's like, whatever you need. You know, like, I'm doing whatever it takes to win this. You know, she's still, although she just got fired.
Yeah.
She was just so.
She stands by his
side. So indicative of her dedication to him. It's beautiful.
Interesting, though, because, like I was saying last episode, that was maybe two episodes ago, when it was kind of jumping between Claire with dark hair and Claire with blonde hair.
Yeah.
Brown hair and Claire with blonde. And how, you know, Claire with brown hair, things were good. Everything was okay. They were coming, you know, they were kind of reconciling wherever they were. And when she went back to the blonde hair, when it was back in the past, that's when they were in the murky waters. Mm-hmm. So now she's going back to blonde, and that makes me think that things are going to go, you know, because blonde means bad.
Oh.
But I disagree. But also,
we didn't talk about Gavin confessing to Lisa.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. We totally skipped over that. Yeah, you have Gavin basically tell Lisa, listen, if the FBI comes here, you have to lie, but call this guy, Doug Stamper. He will help you out. Mm-hmm. He will tell you everything.
Yeah. He'll probably fall in love with you.
And then he gives her a guinea pig.
But Lisa knows Doug. Didn't Doug come by when Lisa was in the apartment?
Yes, but Gavin doesn't know that.
That's what I'm saying, that he was saying call Doug Stamper if something happens.
Not realizing that she might...
Yeah, knows who he is.
Not good. And then what was this thing with the guinea pig?
I don't know.
That was a guinea pig, yes?
Yeah. It was like squealing and she's
maybe,
like...
Maybe she mentioned a guinea pig. Comments, help us.
That's what I figured, that maybe when they were getting to know each other that she mentioned had, like, I had a guinea pig and I loved him or something like that.
Yeah, so probably. Give him a guinea pig.
And then where was everything with Doug here at the end? Oh, that he just is happy with his family and
throwing paper with a little girl.
Yeah, and he's like letting her make a mess and everything. So he seems to be kind of like on the up a little bit.
For now.
Until Frank kills him. I don't know. I'm just
he is no Peter Russo.
That's true.
I thought this was interesting too. Kate sees that the Russians are going to pull out, and she says, "I wonder what that cost him." And I just thought that was a really interesting little bit in there.
Of course she does. She's so pretty and intelligent.
I mean, we were talking about the kind of sacrifices and everything. So that was kind of a universal quote. I thought
absolutely. And I think that is where we're going to end it. Okay, guys, thank you so much for watching. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/ABTV. Check out all of our shows, not just us. We have plenty. Anything that you watch, we will probably cover it. And if we don't, let us know and we will.
Yeah.
So from AfterBuzz TV, I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Autumn Chiklis.
And I'm Pega Red. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Periscope. Download it. Follow me.
I need to get that now.
You should. It's awesome.
I've never heard of this. I have to look into it.
She just filled me in.
Okay. Well, I have heard of Instagram and Twitter, which I am on, at Julian Dujarric. Please follow me. And I can't wait to see you online.
And you guys can follow me on Twitter at Quinn Skillion. You can find me on Instagram at Quinstagram. And you can find me on Vine at The Quinn Bee.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. And we will see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.